Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products.
Get a free audiobook of your choice at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
This week, we're talking about Kubo and the Two Strings. Right, Aaron? Aaron?
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Oh, Aaron, I'm so sleepy. I guess it's Abe. Abe, hi, how are you?
Hey. Out Now is a film podcast where Abe and I discuss new movies weekly. We cover some various movie topics, jump into a mostly spoiler-free review, and then jump back to other fun movie topics. This is episode 252.
Wait. It's another palindrome, sure, but I thought that we were higher than 252. In any case, cool.
252. We just had 250 2 weeks ago.
Feels like it was like a month ago.
No, it wasn't.
I don't know. All right.
You had too much fun with Billington last week on 251. That's what happened.
AB? Yeah.
Yes, AB, exactly. But we don't have an AB today. Today, we're talking Kubo and the Two Strings, the latest stop-motion animation feature from Laika. And joining us to discuss Kubo, we have from Endor Express. He's always telling stories of his origami camera. It's David, yeah?
Hello, guys.
Welcome back, David.
Thank you.
How are you doing today?
Doing great. I am actually awake. And and we're good. I'm looking forward to this.
I'm glad we can look back at this podcast and not know much of the context by memory or completely remember why we started recording later than we thought we would have. But, with that in mind, let's get to some show notes stuff real quick here. Let's see. We have a new commentary track up every month. We do a commentary track for the show, which you can find on iTunes and everywhere else you can find Out Now with Aaron and Abe. This month, in honor of terrible superhero movies, we talked about Spawn. from 19 years ago, 1997 Spawn, which has aged delightfully well. That is not true. It is still bad. And in case you thought that we didn't do enough talking about how bad Suicide Squad was, we figured why not talk about another terrible August superhero movie that happened. And so yeah, you can listen to Brandon Peters, Scott Mendelson, and I talk all about Spawn with a cameo from Abe at the end. And that's up now. What else? iTunes reviews and ratings. It's good to get those. Helps out the show. Helps other people find the show. If you want to log on to iTunes, give us a star rating or two, and possibly put together some words to form a review of some kind, that'd be great.
A two-star rating? Is that what you're asking?
No.
Okay. All right.
I said put together a word or two to form a sentence to form a review.
You said a star rating or two.
Did I say that?
Yeah.
Well, that means you just give us a star rating, and then you give us another star rating, a star rating or two.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying.
Give us a five-star rating or two.
Yeah,
say it that way, then you give us two five-star ratings.
That'd be great. Yeah, thanks.
Any ratings would be good, I think.
That is true, too.
No press is bad press. Just ask Ryan Lochte.
Yeah, no. No, that guy's a dummy. Okay. Is he from Orange County? Because I could totally see him being from Orange County.
How dare you?
Yeah, I don't think so. Anyway, now that we've gotten our Olympian shots fired segment out of the way, let's move on to Know Everybody, where each week we ask each other a question to try to set the tone for the podcast and better get to
know everybody.
On a raced over to make sure that
Herder,
she can do that
just then. That was pretty good.
Her eyes lit up and she's like, oh my god, I need to do this part of the podcast. Abe, why don't you start this one off this week?
When you guys were kids, did you guys have an object that you thought was kind of a cool protection object?
Like something that shielded us from stuff?
That you thought shielded you from stuff.
Thought shielded us from stuff.
Yeah. I mean, maybe your parents told you, or you just, it was your favorite toy, and you're like, oh, it has to have awesome powers that protect me from evil spirits or whatever.
I mean, besides the salt circle I put around my room.
From Hocus Pocus?
Yes. No. I don't know about protection necessarily, but I did like, I was big on Indiana Jones when I was a kid. And, you know, I used to like pretend, like play Indiana Jones, and I had like a hat. And not necessarily like protection, but it's like, you know, you can't be Indiana Jones without the hat. So I used to wear the hat on like my weird rocking horse thing. And, you know, you like jump off the horse onto the bed kind of thing. We're all wearing the hat, of course.
Rocking horse thing? What is that?
Is it really ambiguous what that could be?
No, I know what it is, but...
it's a rocking horse. That's what it is.
Okay, all right. You got me there.
David, did you have any?
No, not really. Not a toy or anything, but I come from a religious family, so we put on St. Christopher's when we traveled, you know, that sort of thing. Nothing like a charm or a toy otherwise.
That works too.
Okay. I got a question.
Yep.
Have you ever gone on a quest of some kind? Be it something simple like, I don't know, getting a burger or something.
That's exactly
crazy.
What I was thinking.
Yeah.
Yes.
Some kind of odyssey to get a burger.
I think when I went to college, I went to Santa Barbara and the closest Del Taco was 40 minutes away. And
you're right. Yeah. We're both gauchos. We know there's no Del Taco.
Yes. And one night we just like we had it with Taco Bell. We just couldn't stand it anymore. We made the drive at 1 a.m. to Del Taco and ate and then drove back.
Aaron and David go to Del Taco.
Ooh,
that's a great movie.
And you know, like the In-N-Out's like a couple exits down the freeway, right?
Yeah, but they're not 24 hours.
True. Yeah, you're right.
And they don't have crinkle cut fries.
They don't.
Abe, any quests?
Any quests? Yeah, this morning I tried to get up at a reasonable time. And then I was like struggling really hard against all the defense that was keeping me awake or asleep. And then at one point I looked at my wrist and I saw my watch was 10:22 and I was like, oh, I'm late. So a quest to get on within a few minutes, but it turned out to be about 10.
I think in your dream, your quest was to stay asleep.
Could have been. I looked right into it and said, you are my quest.
I think I've written about this before, but like when I was getting my PlayStation 3, it was coming in the mail, and this is actually while I was
in
Gaucho.
It was coming in the mail?
While I was in Santa Barbara, yeah. It was getting shipped to me, yeah, for UPS. And it had like come when I came back from class, like it had like just got there, so I missed it, so it had like the package slip on the door. And so I'm like, well, that sucks. I like just missed it. But I did realize that the truck would probably still be in the area because we're in Isla Vista, which is like the kind of the college town next to Santa Barbara, it's like a neighborhood. So I proceeded to kind of look down the streets and race after this UPS or FedEx truck trying to find my PlayStation. And I found it and I got it and I walked like several blocks back carrying a giant box in my hand.
But you were happy and you were like, yay, time for awesome Blu-ray graphics.
Time for, time to play Resistance. Launch title for PlayStation 3.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. There we go. That's how you play it. That's how you do.
No, everybody.
I feel like I know you guys so much better now.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on now. Now, quickies.
Tim.
Each looking out now, even we see 3 seater on the week. That's why I'm going to have quickies.
Tim.
I went fast on that one this week.
Okay.
Abe, have you seen any other movies this week?
No other movies, but I started watching The Night Of on HBO.
Oh, yeah?
And it's infuriating. not because of subjects or the subject matter in terms of the killing and whatever else. More of, oh my gosh, there's...
How many things could this person do to make himself look more guilty?
Exactly!
Yes.
And so I was watching it, and the first episode is 1 hour and 18 minutes.
Yeah.
And I just, my hands were in my head. My head was in my hands. And I was like, I can't believe that this person is, you know, either A, incriminating himself so much, and B, it's like, why would you do something like this?
Feel unreal though, like the number of things he does, like you can see someone doing these things, it just looks from an outside perspective, it looks so painfully obvious that like this is going to be held against you in court so badly.
So yeah, exactly. I mean, I was watching with like a lawyer friend of mine and two lawyer friends of mine, and I was just like, I don't like this at all. So anyway, I finished episode one. We'll see about episode two. Because I'm just like, should I just Wikipedia?
Well, he can't keep incriminating because the crime already happened at this point.
Yeah, I know. John Turturro showed up and decided to try and help him out. So that was good. But, I mean, there's just so much stuff against him. And I'm not saying he's innocent or guilty. I know that there's 7 more episodes. But the first episode was very, very suspenseful.
Well, I mean, you get plenty of comedic relief from all of the John Turturro foot action in the rest of the show.
With his eczema?
Not kidding. Okay. David, have you seen any other movies this week?
I watched the old classic, well, not too old, but it was the Danny Boyle, Steve Jobs movie.
Oh, nice.
It's not that old at all, no. Okay. It's less than a year.
the lesser known one?
The one that nobody went to see. Yeah. And it was really good, aside from it being not accurate, but I thought it was it's a movie, just you're just listening to people talk.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's incredibly well written.
Did you see it when it first came out, or was this the first time you had seen it?
This is my first time.
Okay. And, yeah, it was up there. One of my favorite movies from 2015?
Yes, last year.
Yeah.
I believe it was your favorite film of last year.
Yeah.
You but, and Peter Paris, I believe. You both had it at year's number one.
Yeah.
So, I also rewatched Paranorman again. And that
nice! Gotta have love for Paranorman.
Yeah, it's just really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It continues to stand up for me. I've recently entered it into my favorite movies.
As heard on 2 podcasts ago, I think.
Yes. Yeah. I've seen a few things this week. I saw the other new releases that came out. War Dogs with Miles Teller and Jonah Hill from Todd Phillips. He did the Hangover trilogy, among other, which the poster is happy to say name the trilogy, because we all like all of those movies and not just the first one, of course. it's fine. Like the same way like that Adam McKay clearly wanted to make like movies like The Big Short and then finally got to do so and get, you know, Oscar acclaim. Todd Phillips, I think, is very much wanted to do like a darker, more dramatic story, and utilizes admittedly quite good directorial skills, regardless of how good his scripts are for his movies or whatnot. And like he does that, but it's nowhere near as good as something like The Big Short is. But it is it's a well shot movie and it incorporates the drama a little enough. It's just the story is very bro centric. There's a lot of Miles Teller and Jonah Hill, like, you know, calling each other bro back and forth while they run guns and make all this money. And you kind of know where it's going, mainly because there's so much narration from Miles Teller's part that you pretty much know exactly who these characters are right away. So there's not really much surprise. It's just more of like seeing a very dramatized true story unfolding in front of you. And it's not as compelling as something like, you know, any Scorsese movie that's somewhat similar to this or whatnot, but it's entertaining enough, but nothing special.
Okay.
And then I did see Ben-Hur with my lovely girl.
And
oh boy, were we having fun yet, Anna? You know, it's not nearly as bad as one could think when you think, hey, they're remaking Ben-Hur with people you don't really know that well. It does a good job of establishing the characters for the most part, and like it looks its budget, like it's $100 million movie that's flopping at the box office currently, and it like looks like it, and it has, you know, the big chariot race scene, like it does stuff, like as far as like how it accomplishes its stuff, it's done well enough. I think director Timur Bekmambetov, who did Wanted and Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, like there's a level of restraint here compared to those films that I was not necessarily expecting. I thought it was going to be pretty over the top. But there's a lot of effort to kind of build up the world, build up these characters before things get a little too action heavy. You look at like the original, or not the original, you look at the 1959 film with Charlton Heston. It's a grand epic that's 3.5 hours, and it really kind of earns the dramatic payoff that is the chariot race. This movie more or less feels like, all right, they're going through the motions, they're doing a decent enough job. Morgan Freeman never phones it in, so he's automatically quite good in the movie.
That's good to hear.
We both like Toby Kebbell, and he's good enough. Like, he plays Masala, who's given more dimension in this movie than I would say in the 59 version, actually. But, you know, you walk at him and you think, I don't know what if I'm ever going to really think about this Ben-Hur again, where I haven't seen the 59 version in years, but I can still remember a lot of that movie very well. Mm. And it just, you know, saw an epic like that, you know, an 11 Oscars, and, you know, being one of the biggest movies ever at that time and whatnot, like that kind of adds a level of grandeur to it that this movie, it just feels like, okay, it's an August movie that came out once and I saw it and it was fine, but nothing spectacular. But it does It sells a good message at the end, like as far as what it's trying to accomplish. Where the first film, or the predecessor, the 59 film. It that movie's more of a revenge flick. This movie really has a theme of forgiveness going on, and Rodrigo Santoro's in there as Jesus, and there's more of a, as opposed to the other versions of the film, they bring that more of a kind of a heavy prominence in a way that's done fairly tastefully, I would say. So I mean, it does what it does. It's just fairly unremarkable. So as far as Ben-Hur goes,
so rental.
Yeah, I mean it's two hours. It's not like oppressively long, and it never really feels too slack in its pace. So
gotcha.
Yeah, it does. It's better than I would have expected it to be, but yeah, not a masterclass as far as. I don't know, Greek epic or Roman epic entertainment goes. And what else is it? Oh, I saw Don't Think Twice. This is the Mike Rittman film.
Totally want to see that.
I know other guests on the show have talked about seeing it, and yeah, it's quite good, and I have to agree with them. It is quite good. It's about an improv group. Keegan-Michael Key is among them, and he gets an audition to be on the show that's an equivalent to Saturday Night Live in this movie's universe. And right, it's kind of about how a group reacts when one of them is, you know, suddenly propped up to be quote unquote funnier than the rest of them, and how the rest of the group interacts. What I like about this movie is that, as opposed to being like, you know, like Sleepwalking With Me, Mike Birbiglia's first film. Birbiglia is a fun name to say very fast, by the way. You know, that movie was centered all around his character, which made sense. It was his true story and everything that he was telling.
Yeah.
What, This American
Life? We tweeted at him, and he tweeted back at us.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What'd you tweet at him?
We tweeted at him, that was the most realistic jumping out of a window scene ever. And he's like, it took us like a couple of tries or something like that. I'll have to look it up. But right, I enjoy his comedy as well.
So I was saying that film, you know, it focuses on his character, obviously, because he's the lead. This movie, because it's a film about an improv group, I was surprised that it actually focuses on the entire group, as, you know, puts a lot of spotlight on each of them individually, as opposed to being like just about Mike Birbiglia's reaction within the group or just about Keegan-Michael Key's react. Like it focuses on a lot of the actors in there. And I was impressed by that. I think it's a well-acted movie, a lot more drama than I was kind of expecting as well. But it's good. And lastly, I want to mention Hell or High Water, which I think we might even, given the next week's movies, I mean, there's Don't Breathe, which I feel like you'll be too scared to see.
I mean, never say never. That's what Justin Bieber taught me.
I won't say never necessarily, because I would be happy to talk about it. I'm seeing that this week, and I'm looking forward to it, and it'd be fun to talk about, probably.
Yeah.
But if we don't do that, I would definitely recommend you see Hell or High Water, because that'd be a fun one to talk about as well. It's very, very good, and I'll just leave it at that for now.
All right.
I do know it expanded to like a couple hundred theaters this week, so it is more widely available. So yeah, that's enough quickies.
Yeah.
Let's move on now. Let's get to trailer talk. We talk about one of the newest movie trailers of the week, when it's coming out, what we thought of it, and what have you. And before we get to the new trailer we're going to talk, or the newer trailer we're going to talk about, let's talk about Arrival again.
Yes, let's.
Last week, Abe and I talked about the Arrival teaser trailer for the trailer.
Teaser.
Yeah, it was like it was a minute trailer. It was a minute teaser trailer that we felt established pretty much what you wanted to know about this movie going into it, as far as who stars in it, a very basic look at the premise, the director involved, which is Denis Villeneuve, who did Sicario and Prisoners, among other things. Mm-hmm. And so this week we got the full 2.5-minute trailer. And before Abe and I react to that, Dave, what did you think of the trailer for The Arrival?
I thought it looked really fascinating.
Yeah?
I liked it. Yeah, I'm in.
All right.
Did you want more?
A little bit, if you have any more.
I mean, I only saw the trailer one time, but I think it, you know, it gives you enough that it's like, whoa, you know, like there's a lot going on, and I mean, I don't really know what else to say. But
that's
I'm
fair.
Just,
no, that's fair.
I'm,
that's, fine. That's fine.
Yeah.
Abe, what? Now that we've seen the full trailer, which yeah, I think we pretty much said we might not even watch just because we don't want to know more.
Yeah.
We did
yeah,
it anyway.
I remember we did something similar to that last week. And so we watched the minute teaser last week, and it was very engrossing. And then I saw that the new full-length trailer had dropped, you know, the 2 to 3 minute trailer. And I watched it, and I kind of was bummed out a little bit. And not in a good way. It was because it seemed a little bit more on an invasion generic level. Like, wow, these obelisk discs have arrived in multiple countries, and we don't know what to do with it. Oh no, there's a pattern of countries being destroyed because of them, and we have to figure out why. And then government cover-up.
Wait, is there? Like, I don't recall seeing that.
I don't know. In any case, what I mean to say is I'm a little bit less intrigued by it because they showed me a lot more in the full-length trailer. And it just feels like familiar territory.
I can agree to an extent. Like, I would say compared to getting, like, just a they're in this thing and we have no idea what's going to happen next level. Yes, obviously knowing what's going to happen next to a point kind of takes away the mystique that was established by the initial teaser. So, I mean, it's a weird place where I would say I regret seeing the full trailer for this movie, yet I still want to see it really badly. Like, I really like this cast. I really like this director. I have no reason not to be excited for what's going to happen to these characters. And, you know, even though it's based off a short story, just, you know, a new original sci-fi movie. Like, there's no reason for me to be like, I'm not going to see that now. And I mean, you're saying a lot of things that, you know, tend to go with these kind of movies. I can't say that necessarily all of those things were present in this trailer. I would say there's certainly like a deliberation over whether or not this is a threat, which is fairly similar to something like The Day the Earth Stood Still, which was itself a very contemplative movie about the state of the world versus a classic like things get blown up stuff. This is, of course, the original, not the Keanu Reeves remake where Gort is going all laser beam happy in that movie. And John Hamm dies, I think.
John Hamm?
John Hambone's in that movie.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still looking forward to the movie. It's kind of like, all right, well, you've given me a lot more than I was kind of expecting. I think we even said it's like, oh, I hope it doesn't even show you too much of what's inside the thing. Just kind of get a sense, like more build up to what that is. So I guess what's weird is like I can say kudos to Paramount for giving me a chance to watch just an early version of this trailer, but then they basically it was my own doing that made me see the full trailer. So
curiosity sometimes kills the cat. Sometimes, exactly.
But I'm still looking forward to the movie. So
true dad.
Yeah. The Arrival again, that comes out November 11th, if I'm not mistaken. The other trailer we're going to talk about, which is more in line with, you know, animated films that we saw this week, Storks. That's fun to say. I just wanted to say Storks and, like, just leave a long dramatic pause. This film features Andy Samberg and Katie Crown as a stork and a human who work at a... just trying to get this premise. An Amazon type place that delivers babies, as you would expect storks to do, and various adventures happen from there. Abe, what'd you think of the trailer for Storks?
I admittedly laughed quite a bit, and I think that it certainly fits a sense of humor that, I mean, they mentioned from the creators that brought you Club the Gents of Meatballs and whatever else. Maybe not creators, but
it says from the team that brought you the Lego Movie, because it's a Warner Brothers film. So
yeah, so I'm excited to see where it's going to take me because it seems like a nice family romp later in the year, but or September 23rd actually.
Yeah.
But I definitely enjoyed Andy Samberg's voice acting in this, and I'm kind of curious to see how it goes. Does it feel generic? Yeah, sure. Does it look overly colorful? Yeah, sure. But hey, I mean, I feel like there's going to be some magic here.
David?
I had the same reaction as Abe. I laughed. There was things in the trailer that are just so stupid and out there and that I couldn't help but just like, okay, you know, like I know this is, I mean, I'm not sure exactly how to describe this style of comedy or in animation where it's such a cartoon that they know it's stupid and they're running with it, and I kind of have to, it makes me kind of like, okay, you know, I'm actually going to give this a go because there's some animated movies that are stupid and they're trying to pass it off as something brilliant, and this is definitely not that. So I actually kind of like this more than a lot of other animated movie trailers that I've seen for less stupid concepts. Does that
trolls
make sense? Yeah, exactly.
I guess that's the fairest way to look at it, because I can agree to that degree. Yeah, it doesn't look trolls bad. And yeah, I do like the like there's a lot of voices in this movie. I mean, besides Andy Samberg, you have animation superstar Kelsey Grammer here. You have Key and Peele, Ty Burrell, Danny Trejo. I saw was a name that was mentioned there. So yeah, there's a lot of presence going on. The premise just seems so silly to me. A movie about storks, but I guess I'll be seeing where it goes. I know it's co-directed by Nicholas Stoller, who's worked on Forgetting Sarah Marshall and the Neighbors movies or whatnot. And so I'm just curious what is going to happen. I'd hope it leans more on, well, the Lego movie, since they want to put that in the trailer, than those Hotel Transylvania movies. As far as, you know, a lot of comedic talent in a PG animated film type thing goes. So
I think is Hotel Transylvania Warner Brothers? I thought that was Sony.
Those are Sony. Just take in terms of like the sense of humor.
Oh, right. Yeah, they all have Andy Samberg. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, that was the main connection. They all have Andy Samberg.
Andy was also in Cloudy with the Chance of Meatballs.
That's true.
Yeah, he was baby. What's his face?
Maybe like Bert or something.
Baby, I don't know.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Still an iconic line.
But yeah, Storks, as we said, comes out in theaters September 23rd. And I was going to say, not in 3D? Yes, it's in 3D. Never mind.
That'd be impossible for it not to be in 3D.
Or is it? Hold on. I don't think it is.
Oh, only a flat 2D. That'd be... I feel like that's not the case.
They're saving that money.
Yeah.
It's not on the poster.
Okay, well, we'll find out come September 23rd.
I guess when you race to the theater saying, one for storks, please, preferably 2D, and they'd be like, sorry, sir, it's only in 2D.
Only in 3D D-Box. I'm like, oh my gosh, 15
3D D-Box. All right, that was trailer talk. Let's move on now. Let's get to our main review for Kubo and the Two Strings.
This is the beginning of your story. Your family is very powerful. Your mother used her magic to save you.
Kubo, run!
And bring me to life.
What are we gonna do?
We're going to find your father's armor. It's the only thing that can protect you.
Many years ago, I was cursed. This great adventure is my destiny.
Your magic is growing stronger. You need to learn control.
That should have been some of the trailer for Kubo and the Two Strings. Leica, the studio that operates with stop animation and a handmade aesthetic, is back with another adventure. This time, drawing on inspiration from samurai films, Kubo and the Two Strings tells the story of a boy with a magic shamisen who goes on a journey to find some magical object with the help of two allies, Monkey and Beetle, voiced by Charlize Theron and Matthew McConaughey. Kubo must find these items in an effort to defend himself against the Moon King, voiced by Ralph Fiennes. Many revelations, fun action, and more ensue. David, yeah, what has been your relation to the Leica film so far, and what do you think of Kubo and the Two Strings?
I really admire everything that Leica has put out. You know, there's a few. Maybe Box Trolls was my least favorite of the bunch, but you can't deny how impressive they are visually. And so despite it not being my favorite movie, it's still just, you know, it's just insane what they do over there. And Kubo is, they do such a good job now, and then they actually blend the CG so well together that there's times when you can't tell if it's a CG movie or not. And I think that's really impressive, but at the same time, I wish they would have more flaws in their animation so you could tell that it's still handmade. And I think, but Kubo, I thought, was really incredible of an epic that is not really based on anything, but I think they did an amazing job, and especially Travis Knight, who is the CEO. This is his directorial debut, and for that, I think he did a really great job.
He knocked it out of the park as far as, like, the guy that's calling all the shots is like, oh, by the way, I'm also a good director.
And he also animated some of this.
Yeah, yeah, he's part of the hand. Because there's only, like, what, like 15 people that were, I'm kidding, there's more than that. But still, it's like, it's not a huge crew that's working on these movies.
I was like, wait a minute, there's, like, a giant animation team.
Abe, what'd you think of the film?
And my relationship with Leica?
Yes, both questions.
Yeah, what kind of relationship do you guys have?
I mean, we've been a little bit on and off. I try and call her sometimes, and she calls me sometimes. And, you know, sometimes when we're both lonely at night, we kind of just hook up. But, you know, aside from that, no, in all honesty, Leica has been one of my favorite studios in the past decade?
Ten years? Yeah.
And they, I mean, if Leica was an actual living female, I would have put a ring on it because I was like, no, I need to be with this person for the rest of my life kind of thing. And the reason why is because they take a lot of chances in their movies. And with Kubo, I really enjoyed Kubo a lot. I thought the execution of it was flawless. Like what David was saying, it was the stop motion and the way that they animated things was so well done, since something like Coraline, where you could definitely see there was stop motion, and like sort of what David was saying, I was also still looking for a lot of things that you know, like thumbprints or whatever else on the clay and or on the
Abe,
yeah,
they're not using clay anymore.
Not anymore. Yeah, they're using like actual doll figurines with removable faces.
they're called puppets.
Puppets. But I was looking for, you know, like, nuances of, oh, wow, well, you know, maybe there's something there that would show me that, I don't know, in one frame of one of the movie, you'd be like, oh, wow, that's awesome. But it's not a bad thing that they didn't show that to me because, again, it's so well executed and well shot that I was really immersed in the story that they were telling and visually what was being shown to me on the screen. So pretty happy about that. I thought the action sequencing was excellent. There was a lot of back kicking and like side kicking and whatever else, and I was like, that's exactly how you perform that kick. So I asked this on the credits if they actually had like a fight choreographer slash
yeah,
action
fight
sequencer,
choreographer, yeah.
And that just shows that they care a lot. So I think that the ending was with Moon King a little bit weak on the villain per se, but and moves a little bit rushed, but that didn't take me away from the story because as an epic goes, and, you know, Kubo is trying to find three things that he's looking for, it certainly did engross me quite a bit, and the characters really engaged me. And then it really adds to the title of the movie, and that is very, very sweet and sincere. So, on a journey in which, you know, you have to use your imagination, I found this to be very, you know, like what David said, original, and also engrossing, and again, the execution performance from all the voice actors and just the visual on the screen, I'm in love with Leica. I have no regrets about seeing this twice, and I would definitely tell people to go and see this as quickly as they could.
So you like them a lot.
Yes, I do.
I'm in a similar camp as far as the appreciation for Leica goes. I do believe they're not that like other films don't put, you know, a level of effort into what they're creating, but it's, you know, you look at something like this movie and it's just incredible to think about how many man hours go into putting together these stop animated features and, you know, doing everything by hand as far as like designing the clothing, designing the puppets, designing the faces, which, you know, they're 3D printed models, but it's like it. There's so much here, and what I've been saying a lot about this movie is that I can't wait to see it again, because when I was watching it, when Anna and I were watching it, like I was getting to the point of distracted by how great the animation was, where I wanted to make sure I got all of the story. It's just such an impressive, this feature in particular is such an impressive step up from Coraline, Paranorman, and the Box Trolls, which are all, you know, greatly animated films in themselves. This one has like expansive sets, giant models, a level of detail as far as the number of characters on screen and just like what each of them is doing in one frame. You look at something simple as like the hair, where I think of like Paranorman, whose hair, you know, it stays still. This character, Kubo, he has hair that constantly sways back and forth. So it's the kind of thing where I'm thinking, in addition to telling a story, adding a score to it, which the movie was animated to the score, apparently, and making them move their hands however they're doing it, making them speak, matching it to the performance, they also have to animate the like his hair moving back and forth. Like, that's how complicated it seems to me in my mind. It's just like how much has to go into every single frame of this movie.
Right.
And somehow it's not only pulled off, but it tells an incredible story. Like, and it's like really well performed as far as like the characters that, when, you know, the voices we're hearing out of them, like as far as getting emotion out of it. And I was just incredibly impressed by everything that goes down in this movie. It's a very great tribute to a lot of the things that director Travis Knight, and I assume the, you know, the storytellers, the writers, or what have you, that all what they want to kind of pay tribute to, as well as make their own representation of. You can almost look at this as a superhero film if you wanted to. I mean, it has like a magic boy going on a hero's journey who comes into his own, and. It's a mix of, I'm seeing these great sights, I'm seeing this amazing kind of fantastical version of ancient Japan, multiple locations on this boy in a quest, and seeing the story unfold that's about storytelling, about the power of storytelling. And Abe, you and I, we both very much admire, and I assume David too, we've talked about in the past, though, we very much admire Laika for the way they incorporate adult themes and what have you into their stories. And, you know, the last time around with Box Trolls, you had class hierarchy. By Paranorman, we've talked a lot about with the theme of bullying,
right?
And you know, Coraline goes into like kind of familial issues. This movie's about storytelling. It's about a child who uses a magic guitar, a shamisen, to elaborate on like a story of his life that he can't complete yet because he doesn't know how it ends, and he goes on his own quest to find that ending. And I was really impressed by just another story from the same team of, you know, the same animation group that manages to find some really clever way to both tell a awesome story that's, you know, full of action and excitement and fun characters and what have you, and make it about something. And it's incredibly impressive.
And to extend on that, it's a movie that deals with death.
Yes.
And family, like losing members of your family and how to kind of reconcile that, and that it's really hard to do in films especially for children. And what I appreciate the most from Laika is that they never dumb anything down. This movie has scary moments that you just I'm terrified sitting there just watching. It's like, oh my god, this is, if I was 5 years old, I would be running for the hills.
Well, yeah, it has like those wild like creature designs, you know, like a giant skeleton with swords in its head or whatnot. But that's not even like the scary stuff. The scary stuff is Rudy Mara as like two twins with like these crazy masks that don't move, so they're inherently creepy.
Yeah, and just to piggyback off of what David is saying, that's exactly why I love the Laika Studios is because they don't dumb anything down, but they do deal with these topics. Like Aaron, we talked about this with Paranorman, where it's like bullying, sure, but man, that is a giant chance you're taking with showing that these villagers killed this 12-year-old girl, and that is something that you don't ever see ever. That's why I actually really like the original How to Train Your Dragon, because at the end of it all, he loses his leg, and they give you that weighty emotion, because I was not expecting that. I was thinking, oh, there's an explosion, he's going to be fine, whatever. And then, boom, leg lost. It's like, I like when studios take these kinds of chances. And they make movies where
that's what it says in the script, right? It says, boom, leg loss.
Sorry about that. The juxtaposition of those two words is not great, but...
Well, it says that, and then you cut to Peter Jackson, like, filming Legolas in the woods, like, does someone say my name?
But, yeah,
blood has been spilt this night.
Yeah.
There's, like, a blood moon rising, or blood sun rising. But I love Lucky because of that, where they didn't... They made things scary. There were two sequences in here which I thought, wow, this is kind of, if I was a child, I would be scared too. And again, one of them involves a fight sequence with Rooney Mara and Charlize Theron, and the outcome is not what you would expect it to be, because if you're not paying close enough attention to the next sequence, you kind of don't really see what happened. But, I mean... when you piece it together and you...
Oh, I think you get it.
You as an audience member, as an adult audience member, gets it too. And as kids, you might see, oh, well, there goes her mask, but what happens to the mask, man? Like, there's some dark stuff here. And I totally appreciate the hell out of it, because that's what makes you go on this really epic journey.
And it does feel like, I mean, it's 100 minutes, but for a stop animated film, this does feel like an epic. It feels like they're, you know, you're traveling a whole world here. By the way, there's so much world building that it never feels overcomplicated. There's so much like stuff that's established early on to kind of get you like into this universe, but I never feel like, man, I really need to keep up here. It's like, no, I get it. Like, I get what's going on. I get the stakes at play. I get where this person is. He has a magic guitar thing. He can do stuff with origami. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. He has a monkey thing that turned into like a real monkey. That's great. Okay. Like, it just, I get it as it goes along, but it's telling, this epic story essentially. Like, it's telling this, you know, it's a hero's journey, like goes over that kind of standard structure, but it has its various complications or what have you that make it stand out amongst them.
Right. I do want to add to something you had said earlier. I definitely agree with this because I was paying attention too. You're talking about how Kubo, you know, the nuances of the hair moving back and forth as his head tilts. Mm-hmm. Totally great. And, you know, even in the village, this reminds me of something you've said earlier on with some of the Pixar stuff, where at one point Pixar got really good at animation, so they were able to actually animate people in the background and make you see that the world is alive. It's not just whatever you see in the foreground at that particular moment, like with Woody and Buzz, and everything is in the background is like a house or whatever else. You know, they actually are able to create this village where everyone is doing something and everyone has a reaction. And that takes a lot of effort because, again, if you're doing frame by frame by frame, it's like, that's a lot of stuff. And just the quality and the care that was put into this, it just makes me appreciate this so much more. And I was sorely disappointed by the outcome of the movie-going audience. And, you know, I'm sure that there's other movies being played, but for like a 9:30 show on a Friday, it was like one-fifth full. And I was just like, man, I know that Laika has a couple more movies that they've signed on to do, but I really want people to support these kinds of movies. You guys should just go out and see this and spread the word.
I mean, it helps that they're getting all the critical respect that they could possibly get for these movies every time out. Like, this movie's at like a 95 on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah. And, you know, the previous ones, even Box Trolls, which obviously, you know, it's the weakest of Laika's films, I think, which is not too much of a controversial thing to say. Mm-hmm. I really like the Box Trolls, but they still win all these like animation awards and what have you. Like, they're not going without a fight every time they make these movies. With that being said, Kubo did unfortunately debut to like his weakest numbers yet. He debuted fourth place, which doesn't matter too much, but 12 million as opposed to generally 14 to 17 is like they've been the range for the past three movies. Which is, you know, it's a shame, but that shouldn't take away from how good the movie is, which it doesn't.
It certainly doesn't.
It's a fantastic film.
Yeah. What did you guys think of The Moon King? And did you guys think that the characterization that was maybe a little weak?
Yeah, and I kind of want to touch up on, I know I'm going on a little slight tangent here, but the voice talent that was hired and the casting of...
David,
it does.
That's exactly why we brought you on.
But we have you for that.
No. Well, I saw that and I was like, we should have David on. And I was like, oh, Aaron did get David on. So.
Well, yeah, it's the okay. So this is let's just put it out there. This is a movie that takes place in old time Japan, and it's 2016. None of the leads are Asian actors, and I mean, it kind of bothers me a little bit. Because look back to Disney, what they did in Mulan, 1998. That's a dominantly Asian cast. And that was before anybody started complaining about it, about representation, about lack of, you know, roles and opportunities. And we're in an age when whitewashing still exists and opportunities aren't given to anybody or roles that were written about actual Asian people, the real-life movies, real-life people were Asian, and they're rewritten into the Hollywood films as a white person. So here's a movie where they're actually making it about Japan, and all the characters are Japanese, but, you know, everyone in the lead is a white actor. And I don't know. To me, Matthew McConaughey is – I love Matthew McConaughey, but he does not fit this movie. He is not a samurai. He kind of brings in the sense of humor that maybe they were trying to get, but I think he's not – what he does not bring is authenticity to the role. And I think that's kind of, that's a problem, I think. And, you know, this movie didn't really do too well in the box office. And I'm wondering if a lot of the people who aren't going, because this is just Hollywood being Hollywood, and they're tired of it.
But it's hard to say if it's a if the box office is a reflection of directly thinking Kubo and the Two Strings should have starred other actors. It's like, so therefore we as average Americans are not going to go see this movie as a result. I can't imagine that being kind of, well, those being two connectors. I think it's there's a lot of things out. Kubo's marketing is not as strong as it could. No, I know, just, I'm going to go back to, but it's hard to think of it as a direct correlation to box office, as far as, because we cast this way, we're not seeing it as a result.
Right. But what I mean is that because all these movies, all these executives are always saying, we cast these actors because we want people to come and see it.
Yeah.
And the truth is, these actors are not box office draws.
That's what I'm getting to. Yes. It is the kind of studio logic I can see is that, yes, we hire these actors because that name value will automatically generate more than it would otherwise. That's clearly not working either. So it puts it in a weird, really weird position of like, well, what choices are they supposed to make? You mentioned Mulan, and obviously that's, you know, almost 20 years ago. That's a time where Disney's animated films really don't depend on who they have starring in them. It's the Disney brand that gets you going.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, no one offhand is going to be able to name you who voiced Aladdin.
Like, the kid from Full House,
Scott Wenger. Come
boom!
I'm aware we can, because we're.
Oh, okay, all right. But, yeah. I was like, David and I know exactly who voiced Aladdin.
Who voiced the Beast?
Robbie Benson.
Yeah, that one guy.
I keep going down this path. I can tell you Tate Donovan did Hercules, but you know that doesn't matter.
here's the thing:
and even more recently, you could look like Up. And Pixar's, you know, it's the brand that sells that movie, and the idea that, you know, the outland, not the fact that, you know, superstar Ed Asner and
I don't know, he's a legend, but I don't know if he's superstar.
No, I'm kidding. I'm saying it's, you know, you have studios like that are much bigger and have a kind of something about, you know, a grandness to them that means that they don't have to cast a certain way in order to make money.
But you say this, but all the major animation studios are still casting big names. They are not...
not necessarily.
Name me an animation movie recently that didn't have a big name.
Inside Out.
Amy Poehler.
She's not selling tickets. She and the rest of the cast are recognizable actors, but they're not people that are, you know, they're not names.
They're all names, though. Bill Hader, Mindy Kaling.
When you have like Megamind and it has Will, or it has Brad
Pitt.
That's selling a movie off like, look at this giant, and Will Ferrell. Look at these giant names we have in this movie versus something like mostly the Pixar movies that don't cast like based off the names necessarily.
Whereas DreamWorks, DreamWorks definitely, they go for some of the large names. But to get to the original point, for a movie like this where, like, it has traditionally been in that, you know, $12 to $15 million opening range. Yeah, I don't really know if it would have mattered if Charlize Theron and Matthew McConaughey were, you know, your selling points. I think you could sell this based off of, like, it from the studios that brought you Coraline, Paranorman, and The Box Trolls comes.
I think they doubled down. I think they both had that in their back pocket.
And I know that they spent a ton on marketing, because I've seen Kubo marketed everywhere, and I love the hell out of that, but I'm still disappointed in the box office numbers. But yeah, you know, you have something like Mulan, and I definitely agree with Aaron's point of, you know, at that point Disney Animation is just killing it, right? There's like, hey, come see their next Disney animated movie, which at that time they started becoming more frequent, you know, but prior to that it was like one every like 2 years or 3 years.
It was every year at that point.
It was every year at that
point? Starting with, I think, Aladdin, they had something every year.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, then you look at Big Hero 6, which was just a few years ago, and that was a predominantly person of color cast as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just that Laika is, you know... I don't know where they are. You know, why are they doing this way? When Disney is another big, huge, you know... draw, I guess. You don't. It doesn't matter. But the thing is, it's still, it's the right thing to do, and Maybe the audience is not showing up because of that. I'm not sure, because this is a critically acclaimed movie, and you know, Suicide Squad isn't, but people are still going to see that.
Yeah.
I still believe it's beyond the idea that I think it's beyond the idea of audiences choosing not to see something because of the choices they made as far as who's doing. I think it comes down to a marketing thing. I can say, yes, I've seen lots of Kubo posters and stuff around, but I can't say that these movies, it's going to make like $30 million in opening weekend after a track record of, you know, half that for the most part.
Yeah,
right. But they could spend less money on the actors. But
they could.
I mean, you know, who's going to see this movie because Ralph Fiennes is the Moon King? I don't think that's not been marketed at all.
Right.
Anything, I think that's more of an international thing, which is a weird double standard, because it's like, well, internationally, when people want to be more inclined to see people from the country that they come from.
But wouldn't they just dub him out?
Well, it depends. I mean,
they could.
Some dude. I don't know.
Yeah.
Stop animated films where people do dub.
For the most part, what I hope the outcome is, and I kind of just hope the outcome is that Laika sees that it didn't matter that they had Ralph Fiennes, Charlize Theron, and Matthew McConaughey on their, you know, lead roster roles. And
I look at it as an experiment, essentially.
Yeah,
where
me
they
too.
Look,
They
look at their previous films, which didn't have, you know, giant stars.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Coraline, which did pretty well, and who did you have? Dakota Fanning? So, yeah, I kind of hope that it is an experiment, and the animation and the quality of the story is still great. You know, I appreciate that very much. That's the highest regard. But as far as voice casting goes, I don't really so much mind if you guys had, you know, to David's point, you know, more Asian actors in a Japanese film, because I don't think that really matters. I think that if you're telling a story and you go with it with confidence, it shouldn't matter. And I'm not saying it has to be Asian or whatever. It's just more of like, I don't think the voice casting really matters. And
I think it does.
Interesting. Okay.
I
think it matters as far as setting a precedent for how things should be going.
If you look at Hollywood right now and how, you know, how they're treating people of color and how there is lack of opportunities, especially for Asians, then here's a movie where, you know, it's about Japan and
right.
And you have George Takei and Cary Tagawa. These are two pretty big names in as far as Japanese American actors go, and they are villagers. They are just in the background. Now, I think Cary Tagawa could have been the Moon King. And that would
since
be great.
He has a record for playing villains in various
movies. He does. But I just
if you
don't
guys don't know
Cary
Tagawa, he's the guy from Mortal Kombat that tells
he's Shang Tsung
in
Mortal Kombat.
That Mortal Kombat tournament has begun.
Yeah, and he was also in the 47 Ronin as like the kind of the bad guy, or one of them anyway. Or actually, he was just a dying guy in that movie. But you know, it's just like mix it up a little bit more, because just having them play background characters is what Hollywood has been doing this whole time, and I don't think it's okay anymore. And I know a lot of people of Asian ancestry who aren't going to see this because they've had enough. They're just like, I don't care. It's just another white person movie, you know, about them, and they're just kind of done with it. Now, name as someone who's never seen Mulan. Like, everyone's seen Mulan. It's a huge breakthrough as far as casting goes, and nobody even talks about it that way. But it was just a great movie too. And on top of that, but I think it's important.
It's an understandable thing to, you know, it finds people in tricky waters when you deal with this kind of subject. With that in mind, to get back to the, you know, the movie as far as how it goes. I do think that the talent they do have in the film does a good job.
They do fine. I just don't think they bring anything authentic to the table, though. You know, there's just the way of delivering something that is that will change it and make it better.
And I think that goes into another topic that we've had, Aaron and you and I, with something like The Adventures of Tintin, where we were both amazed that Daniel Craig was doing a different Daniel Craig voice rather than just, you know, doing his regular voice. So in terms of bringing something to the table, a different accent, even something more recent like the Guardians of the Galaxy with the Rocket Raccoon, and people were like, yeah, Bradley Cooper, he decided not to just do Bradley Cooper. He wanted to give Rocket it's his own unique voice. So in terms of bringing something new to the table, I can definitely see that aspect of, hey, try and find this character, you know what I mean? Don't just use your original voice, but try and find a new voice for this character. I can appreciate that statement.
I just think, you know, mainly Matthew McConaughey sticks out because he's Matthew McConaughey.
Allow me.
What? It's not a trap if you do it?
Stealth is my middle name.
You don't even have a first name.
Don't worry, I got this.
The mighty beetle is victorious!
If you think Japanese samurais, he is not it. it comes down to this. So even as a not interesting, you know, as far as stunt casting goes, even that I think is a little like, well, you're just putting him in because he's Matthew McConaughey. It's not
little known fact in Hollywood, Matthew McConaughey was actually the first person considered for Last Samurai until Tom Cruise was like, I'll fund this. That's not true.
So this makes up for it somehow. Yeah.
In any case, the Moon King. What did you guys think of the Moon King as a character?
For one thing, it mentioned, as far as characters putting on a performance goes, I think Ralph Fiennes did a good job of not sounding like Ralph Fiennes very much.
Yeah, I didn't even know that was him.
It was his Voldemort light.
I didn't hear much Voldemort, because I was expecting out of more of a Voldemort-type voice. Yeah,
it's a lighter version.
That's not it. You know, I don't rewatch these Harry Potter movies very much.
It's pretty long. It's a pretty long series.
As far as a villain goes, I mean, you seem to be more or less, you know, not as big on him as, and I did think he did a fine job as far as getting across the kind of what he represents. And
he did fine, but I think maybe because he's just in the movie so sparingly,
so briefly,
No, but yeah, I mean, he's talking about how the ending kind of plays out or what have you. And Abe, I know you said a bit rushed or whatnot. I really like the ending to this movie. I think there's real ramifications for what happens at the end.
Sure, I appreciated the hell out of that.
I did not expect it to go the way it does. And I think there's some really deep layering to what's really going on in that ending where Kubo... It's not entirely happy for him by the time this movie ends. It's not pat at all.
But there's hope. There's hope, though.
There's hope, but there's also some deep complications to where things leave off between him and the Moon King.
Right. Yeah. I agree with that.
But it's really interesting, though. It's something that nobody's ever done before, I don't think.
Yeah.
Yes, and there's much clearer ways it could have gone that would be very much indicative of other movies that I've seen tackle the same kind of thing, and it does not go there at all, which is something that I should expect from Laika to, you know, not do the norm and, you know, make me think, and they accomplished that in my eyes.
Yeah, and I guess I'm more, not at that particular part, but just more of there's a conversation and then an action sequence, and I think that action sequence kind of just feels a little bit rushed. It's been building up to it, but it just the act of dialogue between two characters and then what happens after that dialogue, I just thought, I kind of wanted to know a little bit more of the motivations, but Kubo tells you Moon King's motivations, you know, pretty clearly. Just I guess because he was used so sparingly, I kind of just wanted to know a little bit more. And then
I can say it because you have the sisters, you have the Rooney Mara sister characters are such a constant threat in the movie, where it's dilutes the amount of villainry we get as far as speaking characters go, because you have kind of it's like, you know, you have the Emperor and you have Darth Vader. Emperor is the big guy, but Darth Vader seems like a constant threat. So it's kind of the same thing. You have the sisters, like they're posing a physical threat that constantly reveals itself, where you have this other looming figure in the background
right.
that's certainly a force to be reckoned with as well, it seems, but you just don't know as much about them until you get, you know, three prequel movies to describe his rise and fall.
Yeah, speaking of Emperor and Darth Vader, Kubo is basically a Jedi, so...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, especially
force,
with, like...
Force Wilder.
Yeah.
This movie is a mix of, like, Kurosawa, Star Wars, and Zelda. I mean, that's the movie.
And truth be told, there were a couple times where I teared up, so... I should have said that earlier.
It's very
on.
Emotional. It's a
yeah,
good
I should have said that earlier on, but I have no qualms saying that. There was some very great characterization, and
I think that goes along with the score as well. I think the score is quite effective in this movie.
So, you know, no apologies there.
Any other thoughts on the animation quality of the film?
Mm-mm.
Like that giant wave that opens the damn thing.
The giant wave, but also, you know, a lot of careful craft and care when they hit the snow and the wind is blowing one direction, so all the fur on monkey is going crazy. It's like, mm-hmm. again, a lot of care was taken into this.
Yeah, it's incredible what they do, and I know that they do another layer of effects over on top of it to get rid of all the seams and stuff like that. So,
I see. Okay.
So... sometimes it's a little hard to tell, like, how much they've done or, you know, but what they generally do is that the main characters that you see are stop-motion hand-animated, and then it's usually, like you see, it's green screen most of the time behind them, so that the skies are a little too vibrant nowadays. And when I went back to watch Paranorman, I was just, I could tell that what I'm seeing is, you know, like, really there, and less so on Kubo, so... There is, it's still impressive, but I can definitely see that there's more CG elements in this movie, because otherwise, it's like, how are you going to do it? You know, there's so many things in this, it's just like, it's impossible to stop motion animate, like, all the little, the bird origamis and, you know, lifting them up and forming wings and stuff like that, but... Or maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I would love to see that's the beauty about these movies. You want to see the making of. You want to see.
Anna and I read a pretty detailed press kit detailing every single thing they did in this movie. It's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah,
I'm glad. Yeah, if you stay for the credits, the mid-credits sequence, they show you how they did one of the things that
the giant
in the movie. 16
foot tall
the skeleton. Yeah,
yeah, the skeleton with the swords in its head, and that was amazing. I didn't think they were going to build something that big.
Yeah. And you could see it at Universal Studios Hollywood the rest of the week.
It's their biggest display. It's their biggest creation ever, that skeleton.
Yeah biggest stop-motion character ever made.
It's quite
impressive. Really impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. This movie is really impressive.
I mentioned the wave, and it's like right away the movie starts off of this level of grandeur where it's like, geez, that's like a giant wave. It's like, how do you do that kind of thing? In this kind of world. And then it follows that up with, like, here's the village, which has, like, 70 people walking around doing their own little thing. And
right.
Like, what's happening here?
Including a puppet guy who uses his puppet like Job uses his puppet. It's like his mouth is agape, and his puppet's mouth is agape.
Or even, like, the tiny origami Hanzo character that Kubo has.
Yeah.
That's a two-inch puppet. That's, like, a real thing they have that they had to animate.
That was really a two-inch puppet?
Two-inch?
I think it's bigger than that, no?
No, it's 2 inch.
Wow, I'm going to have to do some research.
2 inches.
That's fairly small.
It's a 2-inch 3D puppet, as my lovely girlfriend's reminding me right now.
Wow, okay.
3D puppet.
3D printed puppet, yeah.
3D printed puppet.
Okay.
I think they have different scales for the different close-ups and stuff like that, but maybe the smallest one is 2 inches.
It's like the Lord of the Rings. They had different scales for the rings for the shots.
Yeah, because they have to get into different, you know, levels of detail. And I think there was a different size Kubo when they actually had the tear coming out of his eye, because water doesn't work differently. You know, like the qualities of water can only sustain a certain size.
How creepy is the water creature thing, by the way, with the eyes?
That was a neat aspect, though. That reminded me of Neverending Story of the
it's
the
great.
Swamp of Sadness.
It's like, that's such a, like, that's a haunting thing right there. Where you, like,
it looks like the Dianoga from Star Wars.
Yes, that's what I was thinking, too.
You Star Wars fanatics.
Okay, with all that said, where should people go and see Kubo and the Two Strings?
In the theaters!
Yeah, this is the highest praise, and I definitely would say... If you can see it right away in IMAX, you can see it right away in IMAX.
I wish it was in IMAX. Yeah. But yeah, go out, see this movie. Give it the love.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, go see it.
The more money it makes, the more we get original movies like this. So there you go.
Who aren't afraid to take chances and show you sequences of death and despair. And
There's also fun and action and excitement in this movie.
Of course, of course, of course. Yeah, I mean,
journey of this character.
I mean, I kind of went without saying, but yeah, of course, there's a lot of fun and action and laughs. But the content.
When a movie's struggling at the box office, things don't go without saying. You need to say it out loud to make sure people know.
Out loud with Aaron and Abe.
I want to say that even despite my qualms with the voice acting casting, people need to see this. They just need to, like, okay, it happened. Let's support this movie and just hope that more movies like this get made and that they make the appropriate fixes in the future.
Yeah.
But yeah, this needs to be seen.
I might go see it again today.
Wow. Yeah. When you wake up?
Yes. Yeah. I'm in a time loop.
But yeah. Kubo and the Two Strings, definitely a movie worth your time. One of the movies I was looking forward to most this year, and unsurprisingly, like, it was able to deliver once again.
I was not disappointed.
Which means that their fifth film is also one of my most anticipated films of whatever year that comes out. So
2018. By the way, I counted the number of production babies. There were 39 production babies, so that's a lot of babies.
They got busy.
Yeah, but I mean, that's like over the course of like 2 years making this, so yeah, that's a lot of babies.
Yeah. It was like a 5-year production.
That's even, yeah, I mean.
As far as like genesis of the idea, writing it, putting it all together, that kind of thing. So
cool.
Yeah. All right, so. That out of the way. See Kubo and the Two Strings. Let's move on now. Let's get to our sponsor real quick. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Why Audible? Well, Audible includes over 180,000 audiobooks and other similar programs for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or any MP3 device. Additionally, Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook download of your choice, a free 30-day trial membership to go with it. Just go to audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. Choose a book to download for free and start listening. It's just that easy. The great thing about Audible is, you can find a book. If you don't like it, you can trade that book for a different book. No questions asked. Audible's good like that.
No questions asked. I like that.
Yeah, you can just trade the book. Like, if you don't like what you're listening to, you can just trade up for a book.
So that said, there's 1 minute left, I can just trade it for a new book.
Uh huh. That said, you can check out the service. If you don't like the service in general, you can get rid of it, but you get to keep that initial book that you download for free. So be a winner.
Read.
Or listen at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
There you go. All right.
Let's move on now. Let's get to some feedback.
Feedback. All right.
This is where we go over some of the various questions and answers on our Facebook page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, where we asked a number of questions for our listeners. They answered, and then they asked us questions because they felt like we have some kind of obligation to respond. Well, we do, and we're going to. Here we go.
First question we asked everybody is, what is your favorite film about samurai? Friend of the show, Marcus, writes, Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai. Conversation over.
That's one of my favorite films.
He does drive a Lexus. Or he steals that Lexus.
He never has a car for too long.
Jason also writes Yojimbo. Scott writes Seven Samurai. And lastly, Philip has Ran.
A lot of Kurosawa love here. Yeah. Not necessarily favorite, but I'm going to throw out a film called The Twilight Samurai, which was made in 2003.
That's the one where the girl is a vampire and her boyfriend is a werewolf. And they
a werewolf samurai.
They're also samurai.
No, but it's this really good kind of throwback to the Kurosawa days. Really solid film, yeah. Twilight Samurai. If you could find it, I definitely recommend it.
There you go.
Next question. We have favorite stop animated film. Stop motion film. My bad. I just wrote it wrong. Jay writes, The Wallace and Gromit Saga with the wrong trousers being the best one. Also features my favorite train sequence and my favorite evil penguin. I also really enjoyed the stop motion moose chipmunk segments in Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl.
How do I know that Jason is not from the United States? He wrote favorite with a U.
Yep.
So we need to know where you're from, Jason, because I want to.
Oh, that's friend of the show. That's Jay from our Batman C Superman.
Oh, Jay.
Episode.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's see. Napoleon writes Hell and Back. Philip writes Fantastic Mr. Fox, and the lovely Anna writes Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
What was that elf's name that helps him out? That blonde elf? I don't know.
What's the, do you know the elf's name?
I don't know them. I forget his name. He was on an episode of Colbert recently. In any case, next question we asked everybody, what is your favorite animated villain character? Joe Jans has Black Wolf from Ralph Bashiki's Wizards.
Oh, Bashkis.
Bashkis, Wizards. Thank you. April has Ursula. That's not even a hard one. Dennis has Hamill's Joker. Jay has Oogie Boogie from Nightmare Before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Philip has the Animal Warden from Shaun of the Sheep. Shaun the Sheep. Shaun and the Sheep would be.
Remember Shaun of the Sheep, where they had to run away from all those sheep?
And lastly, Manish has Ursula.
I mean, I'll throw in Scar.
He is pretty villainous. He's got a lot of brains, not a lot of brawn.
I believe yes. Anna wanted to add Scar as well. She just didn't get a chance to. Any other favorite animated villains?
Animated villains? I definitely...
Is Maleficent
I'll stick up for I'll stick up for real life villain James Woods is Hades from Hercules.
He's got a big chunk of Moussaka stuck in his throat.
His hair blew out again. What were you gonna say before that, David?
I mean Maleficent, Scar, Jafar. I mean Ursula. Those are all great. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Oogie Boogie.
Oogie Boogie is very good. He's
the Oogie Boogie Man.
Yeah.
I'm the Oogie Boogie Man.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Wow.
Whoa.
You guys,
wow.
You guys really are too much.
Anyway.
All right. Favorite animated hero character? April writes Mulan. Jay writes Wally. Philip writes Porco Rosso. Dennis writes Samurai Jack. Jateman writes The Tick. I know TV, but whatever. And Manish writes Aladdin.
Sure.
Yeah. Favorite hero characters?
Favorite Film animated Zero. Hero characters?
Flint Lockwood.
Flint Lockwood!
Flint Lockwood!
Dude created spray-on shoes.
Yeah. He apparently he still has them on.
He can't take them
he
off.
He can't take them off.
From Zero to Hero, you got since you named Hercules, you should say Hercules. I mean, you said Hades.
Yeah, I like
the song.
Some
may have the same thought. Yeah. That, since they have a whole song detailing why you should be a hero.
And then he's got a hero's journey, too. He's often dreamed of a far-off place.
Where, where most heroes of the songs like have the word hero in them.
Yeah, so... All right. This question: favorite score from an animated film. Philip has Ooh. The Wind Rises, and Millennium Actress is great too. Wind Rises. I haven't seen that yet, but again, high.
You still haven't seen The Wind Rises?
I haven't.
It has good music. It has good music.
Yeah.
I mean, all of Miyazaki's films are scored by the same guy, Joe
Hisashi.
Hiyashi. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's
they're all
wonderful
great.
Scores.
Has good lots of stuff.
Yeah,
sure too.
You know his music for Spirit Away and what's that one? I can't think of now. With Princess Mononoke is fantastic.
Yeah, The Legend of Ashitaka is a terrific score.
Yeah.
So again, yeah, Joe Hisashi, fantastic composer.
I'm gonna name a few Disney scores that are amazing. Atlantis by James Newton Howard. Is a fantastic score.
Did James Newton Howard do Finding Nemo, or is that James?
No, that's Thomas,
Thomas
Newman.
Newman. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
I really like that score.
Yeah, me too.
Finding Nemo or
Finding Nemo score.
Yeah. Okay. What about Atlantis? Huh?
I'm gonna listen to it after this episode.
Actually, and Dinosaur. Remember that CG dinosaur movie that Disney did that was like kind of bad.
Dinosaur? I try not to.
Yeah, but the score in that also by James
it features Spawn's D.B. Sweeney, so it has that going for it.
Yeah.
The score in that movie is amazing, and Alan Menken's Hunchback of Notre Dame is probably my favorite score of his. Wow.
John Powell's How to Train Your Dragon.
Oh yeah, John, that good stuff.
I constantly listen to the score from The Illusionist, not the Ed Norton magician movie, but a French animated film from Sylvain Chomet, who also did Triplets of Belleville, which also has a great score.
Academy Award winning Triplets of Belleville.
Nominated. Didn't win.
Oh, it lost out.
Yeah, Pixar had good movies back then, so.
Take that, Emeryville's Pixar.
But no, those are really good scores.
Michael Giacchino's The Incredibles.
Yeah, The Incredibles score
is
one of
those.
And Up,
well,
Up is really good.
Same Ratatouille, I think, is quite good as well.
Yeah, yeah.
The song Ratatouille, I remember. Score, not so much. But
the what?
The song? The
Le Festin?
Le Festin, yes.
I think the score is great.
I really like the Alexandre Desplat score in Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yeah.
Oh, looking forward to hearing what he does with Rogue One.
And I also recently, Anna and I watched The Little Prince, and Hans Zimmer provides quite a good score for that movie.
I still have to catch up on that.
I did watch that. I forgot to mention that.
And?
It's good.
Okay.
wouldn't make any money in the theaters. It's probably good, best that it went to Netflix.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
We might have
if
to circle
Kubo
back
can't
to
make
that.
Money, then, yeah, if Kubo can't make money, then The Little Prince definitely would not.
Mm-hmm. Abe, there's others that we haven't read
yet.
Yeah,
I know, yeah. To finish up the question of favorite score from animated film, Tammy has Aladdin, which is a great score. Manish has Inside Out, Beauty and the Beast, and lastly, Anna has Beauty and the Beast and The Prince of Egypt. I was almost thinking, and The Fresh Prince of Egypt, but...
No. This is a story all about how my life got
turned upside down in West Egypt, where I was born and raised.
On the Pharaoh's lands, where I spent most of my days.
Speaking of Hans Zimmer, Lion King is also incredible.
Yeah, his only Oscar? Yeah, that's a good thing to mention. It's a great score, yes. Last question we have for your favorite Morgan Freeman appears as a supporting character role. Jay writes Morgan Freeman as Q in the Dark Knight trilogy. Adam writes Lucius Fox from the Dark Knight. Jay writes Vitruvius in the Lego movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Philip writes Red from Shawshank. And Manish writes Seven, which he's more of a lead in that movie.
Co-lead?
Same with Shawshank.
Yeah, he's pretty much co-lead in Shawshank as well.
Yeah.
He's the one narrating it.
Yeah, favorite side roles for Morgan Freeman, where
God,
he's just kind of like
in
God and Bruce Almighty.
Bruce Almighty, yeah.
Every time he narrates something,
that's a pretty good Morgan Freeman. I think you and Aaron might be able to go head to head.
He's pretty great in Unforgiven.
He's pretty, yes, he is. Yeah, he won
he's
a Academy
great
Award
in everything.
That,
Is, yeah, is. I mean, it's rare. I'd have to really think about when was the last time Morgan Freeman just kind of like didn't care.
Like even in a movie like that people forgot, like Oblivion, he's not bad in it.
So. I didn't forget Oblivion. Oblivion's solid.
Oblivion is solid.
I love Oblivion.
I love the art direction and the score in that movie.
It's a great score in that movie. Yeah, by what, M83, right?
M83. Yeah, I have two tracks that I constantly listen to.
And Trapeze.
Trapeze.
Yeah, Joe Trapeze. Yeah.
Yeah. What about Ben-Hur? Was he good in that?
He's good, yeah. I mean, he is good. He's not phoning in whatsoever. It's a good performance. Which, again, it's the kind of why you get Morgan Freeman for these movies. Like, he's not one that's like, all right, I'll just do what I do. Like, he does a good job generally in everything he's in.
Yeah. That's true.
Maybe Dreamcatcher. Maybe that's the one.
Is that the one John Cusack?
No.
No, okay. Never mind.
A Dreamcatcher has, like, everybody in it, except John Cusack, apparently. has Tom Jane, Jason Lee, Tim Oliphant, Tom Sizemore, Donnie Wahlberg.
That is Damian. Everybody.
It's a lot of people, yeah. It's a Stephen King one, but not what the... Right. I think there's, what is it, 1408? Is that the one you're thinking of?
That's with Sam Jackson?
That's with Sam Jackson and Cusack.
And John Cusack, yeah, okay.
I'm just thinking other Stephen King movies.
Well, I was thinking, like, John Cusack... Stephen King movies, yeah. Anyway, questions to us now for Aaron, myself, and David. Jason asks,
of the fear factors?
Yeah, what do you think some of the fear factors in why Ben-Hur bombed so hard this week? He's asking, what do you think are some of the factors in why Ben-Hur bombed so hard this week?
Yeah, I wasn't serious about fear factors.
No, I was wondering why factor was capitalized, but... Autocorrect on his phone, probably.
Why did Ben-Hur bomb this weekend?
Yes.
That's the question. I think there's a number of reasons, one that I'll get to at the end, but I think a main one is there's no stars in this movie. I mean, it has Morgan Freeman, that's great, but he's, you know, side character, and he's more...
Yeah. Something we talked about when the trailer came out, too. Yeah.
Friend of the show, Scott Mendelson, likes to say added value element. It's something that audiences can kind of rely on, but not a reason that they want to go to the theater to see it. But, I mean, you have Jack Houston's the lead, and a big... Yeah, exactly. People were going to say, who's Jack Houston?
That's what I said when we talked about the trailer.
And as good as an actor as he can be, that I've seen him be in Boardwalk Empire especially, you know, it's not, he's not, he's, this is his first, like, lead role in a big movie. Mm-hmm. The other thing, why are they remaking Ben-Hur is probably a question many people asked. Also, who is Ben-Hur is what a lot of young people probably asked. And honestly, another thing, Batman v Superman, I think, was a problem. This movie was supposed to originally come out around February, and then it got moved all the way to August. I think that kind of that March gen territory where movies like 300 and other kind of sword and sandal type epics, they tend to come out in March. And they tend to do better there. But I think because the early part of this year was so front-loaded with things like Deadpool making a whole bunch of money, and then obviously Batman Superman and other things that came out around that time, Jungle Book, I think that pushing the movie away from that territory, put it in this kind of dead zone that is August, which does tend to be a dead zone towards the end of the month, as you can see by Kubo, which is, you know, great, but still, you know, people just don't go to the movies as much. They just see what's already out, which is, you know, Suicide Squad. That's why it's still making a lot of money. I think having it in this kind of doldrum zone hurt it quite a bit for being a giant budget Ben-Hur movie that has no real target audience beyond everybody just by default, because, you know, it's supposed to be, you know, good entertainment for anybody that wants to see it, but there's no real reason that drew people in to see it. I also think the marketing wasn't terrifically great for it. I can't remember seeing the last commercial for Ben-Hur.
A lot of theater pop-up cardboard things, though.
Yeah.
Where you could ride with him in a chariot.
And I just think the kind of awareness of the brand was not quite there.
I just think people were thinking, why is this being made?
I think that's a big factor in it. But yeah, awareness. Like, why is this happening? Why is this going on now?
David, two cents. Helped.
About Ben-Hur?
Yeah. Why it bombed?
Nobody cares.
There you go.
Philip asks, who are your favorite documentary narrators?
Who's the Irish guy that narrates all the BBC World things?
Attenborough.
Who's the other guy? Maybe he's Scottish. He's not Irish. He's Scottish.
Okay, well, I'm thinking David Attenborough, I believe, for like Planet Earth and things of that. That's who I think of when I think of him. And Werner Herzog. That would be my other...
I mean, Morgan Freeman's been narrating some stuff, too.
Morgan Freeman's obviously like a go-to, yes. Right. But when I think of, like, the various... Planet Earth and Earth and the other nature... very awesome BBC shows, David Attenborough is who I think of.
I often don't really mind... Like, you know, you'll hear voices that resonate with you, but, you know, I in terms of documentaries, I mean, even a movie like Dogtown and Z-Boys, it's like, Sean Penn didn't do a bad job narrating that documentary either, so...
You choose people that, you know,
that kind of
fit for your kind of thing. Right. Like, and Sean Penn, you know, he early on known for, like, playing Spicoli or whatnot, playing a quintessential, like, surfer, skater dude from the 70s, late early 80s or whatnot. You know, he's narrating a Z-Boys documentary. It makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I get that.
My favorite is James Earl Jones.
That is a great voice. Yeah.
He narrated, I can't remember which movie it was, but...
Conan the Barbarian. No. And then Conan found this witch.
Or that Simpsons episode. And then they were rescued.
Yeah,
let's just say Moe.
Another Simpsons reference for the books.
Yep, got it down. I'm going to go to bat once again for Werner Herzog, though. Werner Herzog has such a unique voice. And just hearing him, the way he speaks is and then
the multi-talented Werner Herzog, who acts, directs,
Jack Reacher villain and filmmaker extraordinaire Werner Herzog.
Exactly. Documentary films, full-length feature films, whatever. This guy is pretty amazing. David, were you going to say something, which documentary James Earl Jones was narrating?
I can't remember.
All right, we'll find out. If you do remember, just shout it out whenever. Lastly, Jason asks everybody here, do you think we can get the Lego Flash movie if the Lego Batman movie is a hit?
Well, when you find a Lego Flash character that's as entertaining as Will Arnett as Lego Batman, well, give me a call and then we'll see what happens.
Yeah, Jason, take that. No, I'm just kidding. But I think that if you hear him break out in the new Lego Batman movie, then yeah, maybe. But
Abe, I'm surprised you didn't mention Alec Baldwin, by the way, for narrating.
Well, he didn't. The question was narrating a documentary, and Alec Baldwin.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
okay.
I love him. Royal Tenenbaums.
Alec Baldwin documentary.
Exactly. One of my favorite, 6-minute narrations is the opening of the Royal Tenenbaums with Alec Baldwin. But that's not a documentary.
Fair enough.
James Earl Jones narrated a movie called Earth.
Okay.
The Disney's Earth, that one?
Battlefield Earth?
It's 2007. Yeah, Disney Nature Earth.
The Disney Nature Earth movie. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, nice. That one. Yeah.
That's just cut up footage from Planet Earth put into one movie. So
Question for you guys.
What's funny is that Patrick Stewart narrated the British release, and that would have been good too.
That is true.
Probably is.
Captain Picard. Question for you guys. Do you guys like James Earl Jones, mustache or no mustache?
No mustache.
I kind of like the mustache.
No.
All right.
Easy answer, moving
2-1
on.
2-1 vote.
No.
No.
Just look at his, like, I'm looking at his IMDb photo. Easily, no mustache.
Do you like his mustache? No.
All right. That was feedback.
Feedback.
All great feedback questions. Should end with a good James Earl Jones. No, that's what I've been saying.
We're going to need David on.
Let's move on now. Let's get to our... What time is it?
Aaron, I think you might be time for some awesome games here. That was fantastic, by the way. I feel like that's actually a very, holiday-themed song, but I think that's actually the song that they played when Kubo was being dragged into the fiery pits of hell.
Yeah, that was the improv theme for games, which I'm quite proud of. I have
that
no,
was
no
great this week.
I thought it was pretty good. I'm going to put it on our Best Of album.
Take that, Jimmy Fallon. We're coming for you in your
recreated
Grammy Award.
Some random goofs and xylophones.
Yeah.
I think Mr. Rogers wants his chime back.
Mr. Rogers can get it from when he takes his cold sweater from my hands,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, his cardigan.
I have a game this week.
Okay.
It is called Magical Music Mystery Tour.
All right, so David's recorder early on was kind of foreshadowing this.
Yes, exactly. I am going to be describing character or characters that generally use guitars in a film, and you have to name me what the film is that I'm describing.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay, so David signs, he's super excited for this. So here we go. Here's the first one. And buzz in with your name, of course. Just yell out in your name and then say the answer if you think you know it. Got it? Good?
Good.
Here we go. The character in this film is responsible for keeping spirits high using an extremely flammable guitar as their group went after a runaway truck with precious cargo.
David.
Yeah?
Mad Max?
Full title.
The latest one.
I still think that David wins this one, but I'll help him out. Mad Max Fury Road.
Abe, there's no helping out. You
fiery, fiery Guitar Road.
I still feel like David should get the point. Because I didn't know the answer. I was trying to think of an animated movie where there was a flaming guitar. I was like, wait, what?
I in no way said this would be animated movies.
I know. My mind was in animation mode.
Here's I said the latest Mad Max.
Fine. You both get credit, but I don't like it.
I think David should just get full credit.
For the record, I don't like it.
Well, do you like calzones?
I love calzones.
Okay, all right.
What about Florida zones?
Wait, which Florida zones?
All
okay,
of them.
Here's the next one.
All right.
This character used a guitar to rock out at a high school dance for the sake of keeping time under control. David?
Back to the Future.
Full time kidding. Yes, you're correct. Here's the next one. In order to win, this character used a guitar at the Battle of the Bands to defeat 2 of 7 evil exes.
Abe?
Percy
Jackson and Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
You barely got that one, apparently.
I was just giving you a joke answer.
And then you stumbled on the real answer, Abe.
I know.
I think here's I should next, get that one.
Here's the next one.
Let's not start that again.
Here's the next one. When they weren't fooling around in a chair, these characters simply played guitar while hanging out, which became easy after the whole pregnancy thing.
Do, do, do.
Abe.
Yeah?
Juno
is the correct answer.
Yeah.
Wow.
What was
That's probably the hardest
played?
One.
Like, it was a nice song at the end of the movie.
Before heading out on a dangerous river rafting trip, one character spent time in a banjo off with one of the locals.
Nope.
So you clearly recognize the music.
Yeah, but I mean, it's been played a lot of times. Abe, a Goofy movie. I don't know.
David, you have nothing?
Is Steve Martin in it?
No.
Okay, no.
It's not Bringing Down the House.
What? I don't remember ever seeing when Queen Latifah and he have a banjo off.
But you didn't watch the extended edition.
The extended director's uncut edition.
The correct answer is Deliverance.
Nope. Wouldn't have gotten it.
Nope.
Okay. No Burt Russell. No, Burt Russell.
Burt
nope.
Russell?
You remember Burt Russell? Kurt Russell?
The father of Carrie and Kurt.
No Burt Reynolds fans? Okay. The character from this film uses... The character from this film uses guitar skills combined with the musical talents of a private school class to show a former band how to rock.
Hey.
David? School of Rock.
School of Rock is the correct answer.
All right. It's getting serious.
Next one. The characters in this film use their instruments to play such classes as Fever Dog as they toured the country with a 15-year-old journalist.
Abe? Almost Famous.
Almost Famous is the correct answer. Here's the next one.
It's getting close.
This murdered musician came back to life and spent some days rocking out in his old apartment before leaping over rooftops and getting revenge with the help from a bird.
Abe? The Crow.
The Crow is the correct answer. It really
the way,
comes
the way you described that was almost very whimsical.
Had to fit the game.
I was just thinking Elvis and some Blue Jay just going around doing stuff.
Jumping on rooftops. I was thinking at first I was like Demon Barber of Fleet Street, Sweeney Todd.
I must have been 6 feet wide. These musicians were on a mission from God and enjoy wearing sunglasses in the dark.
I feel like this is
nope.
a movie I've seen.
Nope.
These musicians were on a mission from God and enjoy wearing sunglasses in the dark.
I don't know. Nothing's coming to my mind.
Wow.
But I feel like I should know this.
The answer is the Blues Brothers.
Of course.
Which Anna is leaping up and down because she thought it's so simple and that you guys are complete idiots.
She
could
have stolen.
Never watched it.
Here's the last one. This down-on-his-luck musician has been trying to make it big in the folk scene and find a cat.
Abe? Inside Llewyn Davis.
Inside Llewyn Davis is the correct
Country tally. Bear Jamboree.
Tally up the scores here.
Country Bear Jamboree. That's a good one. Do they still have that ride at Disneyland?
No, it's not a ride.
Or a show?
They have it in Florida.
Okay,
so Abe, you are the winner, but I did have a tiebreaker question that I want to ask anyway, just because I think the answer's pretty curious. What is the highest grossing stop-motion film of all time?
David.
Yeah?
Is it Nightmare Before Christmas?
It is not. That's the third highest grossing animated film.
Ooh.
Third highest.
Abe, you have a guess?
I want to guess stop-motion.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Are we including live action movies?
No, it's not James and the Giant Peach. So.
It's just
that's stop motion too, but I mean,
stop motion animated movie.
I don't know. Coraline.
Is it Coraline?
Coraline is the second highest
grossing.
Wow. Right. Anna wants to guess.
Oh.
It is Chicken Run. Yes.
Oh,
Chicken
I forgot
Run.
About that one.
I totally forgot with Mel Gibson.
Chicken Run. With Mel Gibson,
from,
yeah.
That was
I love that
Hartman
movie.
Animation as well.
It grossed it. Chicken Run has 106 million and 242 worldwide. Coraline's 75.2 and 100 and change worldwide. Nightmare is just 75.
I mean, I'm surprised that it wasn't flushed away with Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
That was CG.
That was CG? Oh, never mind. Chicken
yeah,
Run
it's not
was,
a stop
was
animated
fun.
Film.
Good
yeah.
pull, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is an Aardman film, but yeah, it's not a stop animated.
Who
was
the
female
voice in Chicken Run?
It's Kate Winslet. Oh, Chicken Run?
No, in Chicken Run. It was the woman from Good Will Hunting.
Chicken Run. Mini
Driver.
Mini Driver, yeah. Let's see. Yeah. Chicken Run, that was the answer. That was Games.
Games.
Thanks. Games. <Yeah. laughs> Let's move on now. Let's get to Out Now Presents What's Out Now. These movies that are coming out on Blu-ray or DVD this week. A lot of things here. The Nice Guys.
Yeah, go see it.
Terrific. and should have made more. The Huntsman Winter's War is awful.
I kind of liked it more than Aaron did. But
Ratchet and Clank.
Didn't hear great things about it.
I liked. Okay. It's fine. Maggie's Plan. This movie is a small movie. I just actually watched this because I'm reviewing the Blu-ray. It has Ethan Hawke, Julianne Moore, and Greta Gerwig. It's fine. It's all right. Okay. The Duel, not Steven Spielberg's The Duel, or that's just Duel. Yeah. This is a movie featuring half a Hemsworth, Liam, and Woody Harrelson that I have not heard great things about. So there you go.
Okay.
Clown. This is from
Eli Roth's Clown?
Well, he presented it, okay. But it's from he's a producer, but it's from director John Watts, who is currently making Spider-Man Homecoming, and he made Cop Car last year. This is his first film that he actually made that actually that finally got released. So there's that. The Walking Dead, the complete sixth season, if you're a fan of the show, it's out this week. I just reviewed it on WiseTheBlue.com. It's pretty packed with extras and stuff. Ash vs. the Evil Dead Season 1. If you are an Evil Dead fan and have not caught up on this show, it is a good show to catch up on. let's see. DC Legends of Tomorrow, Season 1. If you're liking the whole CW superhero shows, this is one of them.
Okay.
Flash is better. Let's see. The Strain, Season 2. If you're a fan of The Strain, then there's more Strain coming.
Keep straining.
Lucifer, Season 1.
Is that show canceled?
Yeah. Nope, it's got a season 2 coming.
Oh, okay.
It's popular. Narcos Season 1. I've heard a lot of great things about this one. This is a Netflix series. The Roots miniseries, which I also heard actually a surprising good amount of things from.
The Redux.
Yeah, the Roots Redux. That's what they're called.
Yeah, that's its code name.
Yeah, and lastly, from Shout Factory, Midnight Run, Collector's Edition. Midnight Run is a great action comedy with Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin, among many others, including like Joe Pantoliano, Dennis Farina, Yaphet Kotto, a lot of good character actors.
Cool.
And it is a really solid, it's from, what's his name, Martin Brest, who did Beverly Hills Cop, 1988, Robert De Niro being legit funny in a movie with Charles Grodin, who's always funny. If you have not seen this movie, I'm very excited that it's finally coming on Blu-ray, because I've had a really crappy DVD of it for like a while now. It's like, this movie could really use a good look. Yeah, good on that movie for finally making it. And if you haven't seen Midnight Run, I can't recommend it enough.
Awesome.
Really entertaining movie. Okay, next up, that was Now What Presents Out Now. Extremely cool. These are movies that are now on Netflix that we can recommend in some way.
Still recommend Back to the Future.
Is that still on Netflix?
On Netflix, yeah.
Okay. There's something called I'll Sleep When I'm Dead, which is a documentary about DJ Steve Aoki.
Okay.
Just want to shout that one out. And also, I'm seeing the director of Old Boy's new movie, The Handmaiden, this week. So I saw Old Boy is now on Netflix. If you haven't seen Old Boy, that is a great movie. One of my favorites.
Korean version.
Yeah, what?
Not Spike
Lee. We don't talk about Spike Lee's movie. That's not happening here. Next week's show. Next week, we're up in the air a bit. But as we mentioned before, Don't Breathe comes out. This is the new horror film thriller.
That looks amazing.
It looks really good. It's from the director of the Evil Dead remake, Fede Alvarez, which I really liked, actually, that movie. But I've heard nothing but great things about this one. I'm looking forward to seeing it. And as I mentioned, also, there's Hell or High Water, which I think is worthy of discussion as well. So we'll see what we talk about in next week's show. And I know the week after next will be the end of the summer, of course, which means that we'll get to our summer movie gamble.
Pretty sure I lost.
Well, we'll see. There's a lot of
Independence Day resurgence. Damn you to hell.
A lot of interesting shakeups happened this summer, so we'll see where everyone lands. But I'm quite excited to see the results of that one for sure. And last thing here, what should people go and see now, and what do you plan to see next? What should people go and see in theaters right now, David?
Kubo, of course.
And what are you seeing next?
I'll get back to you.
It's not the Mechanic Resurrection of Jason Statham.
I'm Jason Statham.
It's pretty good, Jason Statham.
Abe.
Definitely see Kubo. See it twice if you can. And up next, I definitely want to catch Don't Think Twice. I really, really want to catch that. I mean, I listened to a lot of the podcasts with the comedians that the movie stars, and everyone has said that it is fantastic, so I definitely want to catch it.
I'll mention Gillian Jacobs from Community. She's also quite good in the movie, yeah, too. If anything, like I'd say that the main arc probably revolves around her the most. Okay. And she's quite good as far as a kind of a comedic and dramatic performance goes.
Cool.
I will say, yes, Kubo and the Two Strings is definitely worth seeing. Hell or High Water is a good one to catch, which I've mentioned already and haven't gotten too many details on it yet, but we'll see. Don't Think Twice. Just as Abe said, seeing next, I would definitely recommend that movie just because it's good to shout out the little movies because they're certainly pulling up the weight this summer.
Yeah, I mean, late August has proven to be way better than June, July.
Well, even for like throughout the summer with the smaller movies, like I keep talking about Hunt for the Wilder People has been a
fantastic movie. And you keep on talking about Sing Street.
Sing Street was great, yes. The Lobster was like the beginning of summer, but that was a great one. I mean, there's a lot of smaller movies. I mean, even The Nice Guys, which is technically a smaller movie now because it didn't make any money, which is
right.
A shame.
Shame.
Next up, I will be seeing Mechanic Resurrection with Jaden Statham.
Hey, I'm a mechanic.
I went from being a driver to being a mechanic. All right.
It's basically the same job, but more killing. All right. With that said, that's
we need to we need to all work on our Jason Statham.
We need to work on our Jason Statham. That's what we've concluded in this week's episode. That's going to do it for this week's episode of Out and Out There and Abe. You can find more of my work on my personal blog, thecodeofzeke.com. You can find all my recaps of various movie reviews and everything stuff that I've written about there. You can also find me writing daily over at screenrant.com, and you can find me on Twitter at @aaronsps4. Abe?
You find more fun stuff over at Aaron's blog, thecodeofzeke.com, and you can find me at twitter.com/walrusmoose, #thesword unbreakable.
David, yeah?
you can find me at androexpress.net or on Instagram, Twitter at coheteboy, C-O-H-E-T-E-B-O-Y.
More like sword uncomfortable. You can find all the other episodes of Out Now, There, and Abe over on iTunes as well as on Audio Boom.
You can listen to our old episodes over at HHWLOD, SoundCloud, and Podomatic.
Feel free to send us any emails over at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts on the Kubo and the Two Strings that we hope that you saw or anything else we talked about this week.
And we always love hearing from our listeners. You can write on our Facebook wall, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, or you can tweet us at twitter.com/outnow_podcast.
And, of course, there's our Tumblr page full of everything that you'd ever want, mainly just our episodes. So over at outnowpodcast.tumblr.com. Go there, because why not? David, yeah, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, glad to have you here, as always. And that's going to do it. So Abe's going to hold his breath and find out what we talk about next week, come hell or high water, of course. So until next time, so long.
And goodbye. Goodbye.
While my guitar gently weeps, I look at the floor and I see it needs sweeping. Still my guitar gently weeps. I don't know. I look at the world
If you are called Monkey and I am called Beetle, why isn't he called Boy? Kubo.
Kubo.
Kubo.